another episode of the Westminster Confession of Funk on the Cross Politic Network. This is a podcast about storytelling, fatherhood, music, poetry, food, literature, the creative process, theology, and the perils of trying to live the good life. I am Jason Farley, author, teacher, pastor, and publisher at Jovial Press. And today I want to talk about the stories that we tell ourselves and the way that we run into the reality of the way God is at work in the world. Sean Coyne, the author of The Story Grid and one of the podcasters at The Story Grid podcast, talks about how as he's editing novels and helping people write their stories that he has seen how everyone is confronted in their life with a world of order and chaos. That there's order, that there's chaos, and it's difficult to navigate life, navigate the world that we find ourselves in, but that the way that we cope, the way that we navigate that world, is by referencing a collection of stories in our head. And he takes that into the way that he edits stories and helps people write their novel. It's really quite insightful. And I want to read a poem from G.K. Chesterton called The Hunting of the Dragon. When we went hunting the dragon in the days when we were young, we tossed the bright world over our shoulder as bugle and baldric slung. Never was world so wild and fair as what went by on the wind. Never such fields of paradise as the fields we left behind. For this is the best of a rest for men, that men should rise and ride, making a flying fairyland of market and countryside. Wings on the cottage, wings on the wood, wings upon pot and pan, for the hunting of the dragon, that is the life of a man. For men grow weary of fairyland when the dragon is a dream, and tire of the talking bird in the tree, the singing fish in the stream, and the wandering stars grow stale, and the wonder is stiff with scorn, for this is the honor of fairyland, and the following of the horn. Beauty on beauty called us back when we could rise and ride, and a woman looked out of every window as wonderful as a bride. And the tavern sign as a tabard blazed, and the children cheered and ran, for the love of the hate of the dragon. That is the pride of a man. The sages called him a shadow, and the light went out of the sun, and the wise men told us that all was well, and all was weary and won. And then, in the quiet garden, with never a weed to kill, we knew that his shining tail had shone in the white road over the hill. We knew that the clouds were flakes of flame. We knew that the sunset fire was red with the blood of the dragon, whose death is the world's desire. For the horn was blown in the heart of the night that men should rise and ride, keeping the tryst of a terrible jest, never for long untried. Drinking a dreadful blood for wine, never in cup or can, the death of the deathless dragon. That is the life of a man. Wonderful poem. G.K. Chesterton is a master poet. And he explains that the central story of mankind, the story that helps us really navigate the world that we find of order and chaos, that central story is of mankind in the story of the dragon slayer. And our lives are judged as true or false in reference to that overarching story. When that is the story that we reference the rest of our lives by, we can truly know and understand if our story is a story of truth or a story of falsehood. And there's this really great movie. It was actually a French children's movie, which seems a little wearying at first, but it's a really, really well-made movie, a well-told story, and it's called Dragon Hunters. And it has been since made with English dubbing, and it's really, really quality entertainment. And it has four characters telling different stories about their own world. Dragon Hunters is a story where the world is being overrun by dragons, and the four main characters each tell their own story differently. Zoe is a little girl that believes in fairy tales. She spent her life reading fairy tales. She looks at the world and she loves it. She loves every minute of it. A world that's filled with dragons, just what she hoped to find. But she lives with her uncle, who also believes that the world is a fairy tale, but he's an old, embittered, blind king because he resents the way of the world that he finds. And then you find two other characters, neither of whom believe the world is a fairy tale. Gwizdo is the small, worldly, little greedy man who says, no, the world is just simply a place where you either are earning money or you're losing money, that you're either taking advantage of people or they're taking advantage of you. And he and his partner, Leon Chu, are dragon hunters, but they don't believe that the world is all like a fairy tale. And Gwizdo is quite happy with his disbelief, lives contentedly as a selfish little man. Well, Leon Chu wishes that the world that he believed in as a child, the world that was like a fairy tale, he wishes that world were true. But he's been convinced that the pessimism, the self-preservationist morality of Gwizdo is in fact true to the world. So everywhere he goes, he drags his hands, he has a hard time lifting them, except for those moments when he is fighting beasts that are threatening people. He loves that part because he wants the nobility and the indignation against dragons that you get in a world of fairy tales. He wants it to be true. So his unbelief is just this backpack full of lead bricks. He doesn't believe the world is a fairy tale, but man, he wishes it was. But as the story develops, we see that all of the other knights are dead. They've all been destroyed. And the Zoe, who knows the world is a fairy tale, sneaks out and goes looking for a dragon slayer like the ones in her fairy tale. And she's rescued by Gwizdo and Leon Chu, who go back and say, oh, you're looking for dragon slayers? Well, we're dragon slayers for hire. And then as they go along, they each run into the reality that the world is actually like a fairy tale. And they all have to deal with it in different ways. They all have to either adjust themselves to the reality of the world or keep trying to tell their story against the world, against what they actually find in the world. And each of them deals with it differently. And I don't want to spoil it because I really think you should find the movie Dragon Slayers and go watch it. But there's this amazing thing that we should be learning from movies like Dragon Hunters, from poems like The Hunting of the Dragon. We live in a world that really is full of fairy tale oddness. And it can either be embraced as a good story or it can be resented. But the world is the way that it is. The way we tell our own life story, all that it does is help us to live well in the world God made, or make it impossible to live well in the world God made. But the way the world is the way that it is. This is actually the world that Jesus, the Son of God, was incarnate in, that Jesus was raised from the dead in, that Jesus ascended to the right hand of God to rule as a man, as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We dwell in the kingdom of a great dragon slayer. We live under the feet of the Knight of God who grabbed hold of that great serpent that was in the garden in the beginning. And when he held the worm by the face and plunged it into the depths of hell to stomp upon his head until his skull cracked wide, he became king. That's the kind of world we live in. And we can either resent it, or we can jump in and enjoy it. This Jesus was given the reins of history. This dragon-slaying knight was made king of every nation, and he calls his people to be like him, to trust him, to order our lives to conform to his death and resurrection. Faith is believing the story that God is telling about our lives. Faith is telling the same story about our lives that God is telling with our lives. God orders our lives. He sends us dragons to vanish. Sometimes they're small little dragons, sometimes they're large ones, but he sends them to us so that we can be saved. When we get bitter, when we get frustrated at what God gives us, we're trying to tell a different story about our lives than he is. He is the one that points to Job and says to the dragon, "Have you considered my servant Job?" The dragon wasn't attacking Job. And God, at that moment, does not attack Job. He turns the eyes of the dragon onto Job because he's setting him up to be a great hero of the faith. When we're tested, it's not so God can condemn us. It's so that God can prove the steel of the sword that he has placed in our hands. He's showing the strength of the armor of God. He's showing forth this great salvation on all the earth, as the Bible says. We tell the story of our lives like God is attacking us, often at the very points where he's setting us up to be saved. We fail in battle because we're telling a different story about our lives than God is telling with our lives. We are called to embrace the actual world, believe the story that God is telling, and then live in that story with joy, right? Knowing that Jesus has slain the great dragon, and now he's conforming us to his dragon-hunting image. We are all called to be dragon hunters. That is why life leaves scars. So often we look back in our lives and all of the places where we've been scarred by living in the world are the places that we are also embittered about, the places that we resent, because life leaves scars. But the story of following Jesus is the story of a page becoming a knight. Jesus says, "Take up your cross and follow me." We've got dragon skulls to crush. Romans 16:19-20, talking to the church in Rome, Paul says, "I want you to be wise in what is good, simple concerning evil, and the God of peace will crush Satan under your feet shortly." Life leaves scars because we are all pages becoming knights. This is one of the struggles that I'm having with my current novel as I'm writing it, Leprechaun Wars. I shrink back from giving my character scars, one character in particular. I just keep shrinking back every time I know that something I'm writing is going to scar him, because I'm just not sure I'm going to be able to make it worth it. Am I going to give him a big scar and it's not going to turn out to have been worth it? I'm not positive that I have the control or the creativity to bring new life through scars. And I see that in my writing, and I shrink back, and it's something I need to get over, something that I know that I need to push through that resistance. Because I also know that if Jesus can hold his scars out to Thomas and say, "Right here, this scar, you want to put your fingers in this one? This scar, these scars, this is where the proof is that the resurrection at the end of time has broken into the present." If Jesus can point at his scars to Thomas, then surely I can trust God as his love gives me scars. I have been wrestling with this a lot lately, and I have a poem that I've written. I haven't shared one of my own poems on my podcast before, so here's a first. This is a poem that I wrote recently. It's called "The Scars of God's Hands." My soul clung to the dust. Now dust clings to my soul. Your life breath, once blown up the nose of my father, once exhaled in fruit statutes, once blown across the dry bones until they could get up and dance, breathe life on me. Speak again the six stanzas that climb up to rest. Speak them into me. Tie my ears to my dusty soul and blow. I, clay jar, am cracked, scratched, divoted, grand canyons that leak. But Lord, if my scars leak out, might they leak in? If I am not airtight, might your breath sneak in? Can scars be glory? Can glory leave scars? I will run to my heart's end, enlarge my heart. Might your scarred love love the scarred? Let your scarred hands leave scars. Blow, blow hard enough to dislodge the dust. even if it takes a hurricane, even if it leaves scars. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Westminster Confession of Funk. If you're looking for more of the funk, check out my blog. It's hosted by Cross Politic. You can check out my books at Amazon. You really should go to the Cross Politic Network and become a member so that you can support and get more of the Cross Politic Network. You can visit Jovial Press to find more of the funk, and I hope that you look down at the scars your life has left and see in them training to be a dragon slayer. Talk to you again soon. Keep it funky, people.